Welcome to Pagan Coffee Talk. Here's your host, Lord Knight, with special guest, Lady Maya.
Tell us about the ethics of Ravenwood. What do y'all teach, and as far as ethics go?
Ethics. Well, from an ethical standpoint, everyone has heard of craft law.
Mm-hmm.
There are several sets of craft law that have been passed down through many different traditions. Yes. There are sets of craft laws that have been compiled from all those traditions and approved by several, by many elders. So we, from a neophyte's perspective, use one of those sets, Lady Galadriel's New Book of the Law, to teach initial craft law.
Right.
The interpretation of laws is something that we help them out with. But on top of that, we teach something called the tenets. So the seven tenets of balance, harmony, reincarnation, trust, humility, tolerance, and learning.
All right.
So we teach those seven tenets, and that provides a pathway for exploration of our world. And those are the inner pieces that we use to say, am I in alignment? I mean, any problem you have in the world, in your life, you can go back to those tenets and find exactly which one you need to work on. So between craft law and the tenets, and then the level of respect and dignity we expect people to uphold in their own lives, that's kind of where we get into ethics. Now, there's a big difference between a law and a read. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Let's do.
Yes. So the law, look, craft law is based in natural law.
Right.
A read is actually advice. A read is not law.
No, it's not.
So when you start talking about the Wiccan read, it is advice. It is not
a law.
So when you start talking about and harm ye none, we know this is something to try to attain.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always black and white. There's always white within black. It's not something that's fully attainable. It is something we strive for. No one is perfect. And that, you know, it's a great place for people to start.
Yes, it is.
Think about the responsibility of their actions and take responsibility for their actions. But mm-hmm. And harm none also includes the self. So there's a lot of introspection that comes into that.
Right.
And as you progress through craft, there are other sets of laws that come into play. There's another whole set of laws at first. There's another whole set of laws at third.
Yes.
For our tradition.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, so, I know there's some things we learn differently than y'all, so.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But there's also, you know, within how we go about by day in our regular lives and how we go about by night, should I say, in our craft life, those things will eventually come into alignment. I mean, you can't go out and do this stuff in the daytime and then do this stuff at night and say, oh, I'm this. No. You're going to get bit hard. But what's interesting, though, is over time, through the act of practicing and becoming who and what we are within craft, that alignment really is interesting because it shows up in your business world.
Yes.
It shows up in how you're dealing with responsibility and actions and how you handle your business world, and everything in your life turns into a mirror.
Yes.
So if you've got somebody at work that's disrespecting you, right?
Right.
The first thing you do is ask yourself, well, who am I disrespecting?
Exactly.
Fix that, and it fixes the other one. You know, it's really interesting, and it may not even be someone at work, maybe a neighbor. I mean, it's really interesting how it all balances out and works around it. But from an ethics perspective, there are certain things that we expect people to work on their stuff. We expect people to treat people with respect and dignity. Mm-hmm. We expect people to mind their boundaries and set boundaries appropriately and manage their personal lives in a dignified way. And, you know, one of the things that I've always said with running a group is I always want to provide a safe, secure place to worship, meaning that you are a dignified individual. And I'm not here to joke you, insult you, lead your life, control you, nothing. And no one else in the group should be that way either. People need to grow in parallel, not bound together.
No, people need to learn to stand up on their own before they can help somebody else.
But if your life lessons, if your life lessons are coming from your interactions with your coven members, you got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because then your group energy is all messed up. Because they should be individuals being able to stand on their own 2 feet and not having some huge lesson about codependency and control issues happening within the coven itself. That's not a good thing.
True.
And trying to manage that safe, secure place has been very interesting.
So y'all just like us, y'all are very keen on the whole entire keeping your word.
Mm-hmm.
And accepting responsibilities for your actions.
Yes, very much so.
And I've always found it surprising as we start to teach people this stuff, they seem to think this only applies inside of temple. They never seem to realize how it moves outside of that into your normal day.
But if they haven't, but if they haven't assimilated it across all of their worlds, right, they'll fail at temple too.
I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it in my life as I went along, where I started to use those ethics and morals to shape how I did business and how I did my job and interacted mm-hmm. with other people.
Mm-hmm.
I do find it very fascinating.
The thing that even gets more fascinating about trying to do that is maintaining your boundaries, because mm-hmm. They're not living under the same rules you are.
No.
So you can't let their stuff cross your boundaries either. It's interesting. It's very interesting.
It is. I mean, I've had a lot of problems because we're a real believer in the keeping your word and dealing with contractors and stuff like that when they don't show up and stuff like that. You're sitting back going, you know, is my moral getting in the way of me getting something actually done? Or
and why doesn't that bother you that you broke your word? Why doesn't that bother you? And if you're not going to do it, communicate. Communication goes in a long way, and communication in such a way that is not abusive. Showing up authentically is what you really
need. Yes. Right. I don't need anything else. Keep your word. Keep going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get all upset when something happens and I can't keep my word. I'll drive him up the wall going, wait a minute. No. We're going to be there.
Well, one of the things that goes back to this ethics thing and Lady Santana's vision of adding respect and dignity into the craft is managing how you show up as a practitioner of the faith. We live within a country. There are laws of the land, and there are general cultural norms that can either bring respect or bring disrespect very carefully. So we are very careful about how we present ourselves in the greater world. We're very mm-hmm. careful about how we go about making changes in our world. You know, Letty knew how to use the media because she was in entertainment. And with the way she looked, she was good at it. There were many times there were the Atlanta Public News where they had something come up, the 5 o'clock news would use her as the daily lead in. You know, you watch the TV during the day, you know, the news will at 5, blah, 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 blah. And I can remember one where they were coming over to talk about some battles that we had when we were over in Decatur, and she's like, coming up at 5, there's witches in Atlanta. And she's standing in front of the altar. Yes, there's witches in Atlanta. Yes, we are here. I don't remember the exact phrase, but it was really good. But it was in presentation. That was a shock value thing. That was a affirmative thing. It said, yes, we're here. But I'm presenting myself in such a way that I look like everybody else.
Yes.
Right. People are shocked of how I dress when I'm in public as a witch. I'm in a white linen button-down shirt, a single necklace, and a pair of khaki pants or some shorts. I don't present myself as, you know, Endora running around in the woods. And sometimes that persona can be helpful with what you're trying to do if you want that out there. But sometimes it can hurt you as well because you have to be approachable as a leader.
Yes.
Right. But the other one can kind of keep you not as approachable, which kind of helps distance too much crazy from you, because there's crazy out there.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of crazy everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think I saw crazy in the mirror this morning. I mean, from when I first got into now, there's just been seems like such a big change in craft in our, well, in the pagan community at large, not necessarily in craft, compared to when we first came up.
What change are you talking about?
There seems to be more free willing.
Oh, yeah.
In the pagan community at large, everybody's just, I still don't understand this whole manifest destiny thing and how they think it actually works and stuff like this. You know, you're just seeing some ideas that seemed a little bit more far-fetched than what I was brought up to believe.
Well, you were brought up more on a traditional bent, but the way things are structured now with social media and the books and all that's out there for quote unquote resources, a lot of it is, it feeds the ego. It feeds the identity. And the minute you start getting into this, I am, you know, I am this and I'm a this and I'm a that and look at me go. And it's subtle. It's very subtle. It actually shuts down the spiritual growth aspect of it. Much of what's being taught is more mechanics. It's about, you know, here's all the side, what I call the side dishes, you know, the divination, the magic, the whatever, you know, all the side dishes. And then there's the root of the faith. And people are shocked that there actually is a faith behind there that says there's a God and there's a goddess. And this is how they interact. And this is how we deal with the elements and spirit. You know, if people say, well, you know, I had somebody ask me one time, well, what do you think about quantum physics? And I was like, well, it's a great study. They're like, well, how are you bringing it into craft? I'm like, I'm not. Where does the boson Higgs go in my circle? It doesn't. You know, where do these pieces and particles and how they interact go into that four element and spirit circle? They don't. The concepts may be in parallel, but it doesn't necessarily translate. There's a lot of things out there. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I find it easier to use sometimes quantum physics, especially on the podcast, because I don't reveal mysteries. Again, parallel, I know they're not the same or anything, but sometimes using that allows me to, I think, explain what's going on without giving away any mysteries.
But you can use metaphysical stuff, too. I mean, you can use metaphysical theory to do that. You can start talking about elemental theory to do that. And all that stuff is available from places outside of craft. And we teach that, right? So, so I can very easily start talking about the divine mind, the higher mind, the universal mind, and the linkage between the subconscious and the conscious mind, and this, da, 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 blah, blah, blah. And I can talk about the interactions between the elements and the this and the that. That all, you know, makes sense. But I think that, you know, back to our original piece, is you were saying that it's very different now, very free will, very open. We've told people, do as you will.
Yes.
We've published that but it's been published for decades. Do what you will shall be the whole of the law.
Yes.
And then people are empowered and they feel filled with spirit and they want to express. And then their expression grabs other people and gets them filled with spirit. But the person that started expressing it suddenly feels like, oh, well, you know, I'm this. It feeds their ego, which stops their growth. Which stops them from harming other people's spiritual growth.
I like that.
It's a journey. It's a quest. It's a daily, it's not a role you put on and take off at the end of the day. It's you live it. You breathe it.
You are it.
Mm-hmm. And it is you.
Yes. And I'm sorry, you're not going to gain enlightenment or wisdom by sitting in your mom's basement playing video games all day.
No.
You got to get out. You got to experience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the main way we gain wisdom.
I will say this. I can remember back in mid-late 90s. I don't know if I knew you at that point. I can remember mid-late 90s, there were a lot of people that were looking for teachers. And because they were in outlying areas, they had problems finding teachers. So they were growing things grassroots on their own, which is what they had to do what they wanted to do to practice, which, you know, that was an interesting thing in itself. But I think that with the expanded communication and the linkages and the ability to find people online and talk to people and communicate via social media and via the internet, I think it has helped a lot of people to find their teacher. Yes. I think that's been a good thing, whichever teacher that needs to be.
I mean, I hate to be this, but we've gotten communications from people all the way down in Georgia wanting to take classes with us. Mm-hmm. Now, the majority of the times when they do that, I'm like, why don't you just go to Ravenwood? But
really? How many of you ever did it?
Yeah, why drive all the way up here? Just go to Atlanta. But, I mean, it does help. I mean, we have gotten interest in people farther away than what we used to back in the 90s and stuff like that, where it was just local people.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that has...
We've got groups in California. We've got the initiates in Albuquerque. We've got... One of our groups just moved up to, like, the Commerce area. Commerce, Georgia, to move closer to Athens, Georgia. And then we've got two here in North Atlanta. There's a lineage group in Dahlonega. There's a lineage group in Decatur. I know there's other ones. Who am I leaving out?
I got to ask this question. Since y'all were a much bigger group than us, how do y'all deal with kids and parents and inside of...
Okay. This is an interesting one. And this is on a group by group basis because Lady Santana had children. Lady Santana was a mother. She allowed families. And first off, we won't teach anybody under 18. That's not happening.
Right.
Okay. But if you're a family and you had kids, she would allow the kids to come as long as they were well behaved and the parents kept them under control. Because if the parents didn't keep them under control, trust me, there were 50 other witches that would. And the kids would learn real quick to behave in certain ways. Lord Aragorn, his mom, I think he showed up at Ravenwood as a 14-year-old with his mom. But he was raised in the craft. That's my high priest.
Okay.
And he was around in the early days, but he was very young. He wasn't of age. But we leave it up to the individual high priestesses and high priests of the groups to decide whether or not they're going to bring in children or not or do children's ministry. Personally, I don't have kids. I was never trained to train children in this, and I'm not going to, I don't want somebody else's kid being my guinea pig. That's not fair. That's not smart. Okay. And that
I completely understand.
Responsible. However, there are other group leaders that do feel like children are fine there. And that's fine. I support that as well. I mean, there's room for that within the tradition. It's just me personally, I don't have any training in that, and I don't want to mess something up.
I understand what you're saying. It's a little different when you're dealing with kids compared to adults. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to see. Now, do you personally allow people? Do you still take that same stance if a member comes in with their kid?
As long as I don't know what to do with kids. No, I don't know what to do with kids. Now, if we have a picnic or something, sure. Right. But as far as rituals and stuff, no, I don't allow kids in because it's not something, like I said, that I'm trained to deal with throughout the evening. So, I have had kids that are quote unquote 16, 17, 18 with their mother. I have had that.
Okay.
But young children, I don't.
You don't?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
And there's a place and a time for kids within ritual. There's Sabbaths and grand meetings and things. Yeah, that's perfectly appropriate. But day to day basis for Sabbaths and moons and stuff for us, it doesn't make sense. And like I said, I don't have any training in ministering to children.
Okay. So now we've talked about kids down there in Ravenwood. Because I mean, my theory is that in the pagan community, from what I've been seeing here lately, is it's kind of like they don't know traditions like ours still exist. That the traditional initiated groups.
I think
they get the impression that they think we've disappeared.
I think they've heard of it. They've read about it, definitely, because it is in the books. But I think they get the sniff of it, and the sniff that they get is damn traditionalists. So they know we exist. Yes. But I think when they're presented that way, we seem a little hairy scary, which is why when I present myself as not, you'd see me in the store and you wouldn't think anything about it. Because it's just a part of my life. It's not an outfit that I put on a Saturday night to run around and look a certain way around certain people to get their attention. Because that whole persona of let me dress a certain way to show you how witchy I am, that feeds the ego. It's not approachable. And it's oh, look how powerful I am. I have this, that, and look at the things that I have. The things are what define me and not the spiritual inner piece of it.
It's the same shot content with all the bumper stickers on the back. You know, my other car is a broom and all this other stuff. So I've never understood that either. That is definitely something in the traditional community. I think we're sort of beat out of us.
I don't know that it was beaten out of us. It was just never seen as something that fed our spirit. I mean, it's interesting because when people first start coming into craft, the first thing they do is bash where they came from. Yes. Whatever faith that was, they bash where they came from as a way of negating and learning their own stuff. So the first thing you've got to do is get them out of bashing mode. Right. And sometimes bashing mode includes dressing a certain way. Think about it. When you were a teenager and you wanted to shock your parents, what would you do? You'd listen. Years ago, you would listen to louder music, louder metal music, whatever, or something. Uh-huh. Fit in with them. My mother listened to Little Richard in the 50s. Drove my opera singer grandfather nuts. I live in the middle, you know. My mom was like, okay. My dad was like, oh, yeah, great. What's that band? And my mom was like, I can't stand that stuff. But there's also dressing differently and being more provocative. Is it in your teen years to start showing your independence? That's part of that independent growing up experience in the late 20s, late teens, early 20s, to set yourself separate from your parents. Well, it's the same thing in craft because you start breaking away from that which you were raised in, whatever faith you had attuned to, and now you have to negate that, be it word or deed or action or outfit, shoes, hair, jewelry, whatever, and shock everybody into this is who I am now to help prove that point. It's the same thing. It's the terrible twos, right? You know, think about teenagers. Think about teenagers. Teenagers are going to try your patience as they go through and figure out their independence and define themselves, which takes years to do. It's the same thing when you convert over to a faith, because that's what this is. This actually is. It's active conversion. There's very few people coming in that learned it as a child.
Because I see the same things as you do as adults sort of like going through their childhood again as they're changing faith. You know, so I find it actually interesting.
Yeah, because it's a redefinition and a freeing up of old. It's making more space for something else to come in as they free themselves up from something that they no longer want to do. And that process takes place whenever you try to make changes internally. We were talking earlier about how people in classes start getting new perspectives. It's the same process but on a smaller level, and sometimes it's a bigger level, but depending on what it is you're processing through.
Now, I have heard some people, and they're wanting to introduce a slight concept I haven't heard too much about. It's sort of like socialism spirituality, where we all need to be on the same running line.
No. That's not how it works. You.
I don't understand where in the world, how do you straighten everybody out to get them all on the same line anyway? That's impossible.
That's called control and conformity and drinking the Kool-Aid. It's a cult. It's cultism.
Yeah.
We're not a cult.
The fact that this is starting to come up in the community bothers me a little, that these people are starting to think this way.
Well, yeah. I think there's a lot of concepts in our normal society right now that are harmful, and that's one of them that I think is harmful. And if it propagates over to craft, it's not craft. It would never be accepted as craft because we're individuals and we have freedom as a baseline of who and what we are. Being craft means you are free.
Yes.
And losing the sight of that means you are not free. And if that's what they want to promote and they want to have their own little cult control thing until that starts going bad, go for it. But like I said, people are going to be where they need to be and learn from that. Is that cultism, socialism, communism, craft point of view going to change what I do? No.
No.
Am I still going to be there, a beacon for eyes that can see? Yes.
Yes. It's interesting how in the world I see people fooling themselves and I sit back and going, I know enough to know what I don't know, and I'm an idiot. I don't understand why other people can't see the same thing.
It's humility. Because if you sit there and say, yeah, I have, here's my armor, and if there's a chink in my armor, oh my gosh, there's a fear factor of somebody having a chink in their armor. I can tell you how many times I said, you know what, I was wrong. I completely got this wrong. I was wrong. I've learned from it, and I apologize.
It happens.
And that's a big deal. I mean, I'm human. But when you have your armor so built up and you're so afraid to have a chink in the armor and to let something break through to find that you are an infallible being underneath there, there's a problem. That's ego. Yeah. And that's not humility.
Now, to discuss, when we do get stuff wrong, we admit it. But at the same time, when do we not give up the ghost? When do we not cross that line?
I don't think it's an all or nothing thing. I think there's a valid piece that says within any situation, you own part of it, as do others. And validly looking at that and taking ownership for your stuff and not taking ownership for other people's thing is an act of discernment. It is true Queen of Swords in the Tarot. It is discernment. And taking responsibility for your stuff is the important part. Not taking responsibility for someone else's stuff is just as important. Not That's authenticity. That is authenticity.
I completely agree with you 100%. It amazes me how many people will give up their values when challenged just a little versus other people who go like, no, this is the value I have. I'm going to stick with this. It works for me. And you can't change it no matter what.
You mean like if you're in a situation with another person, they'll give up their values to keep the person around?
Yes.
That's okay. That is.
That drives me up the wall.
That comes from fear of rejection. That comes from abandonment issues and fear of rejection.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Because you think about it.
Yeah.
If you and I got into a fight, right? And we have, honestly, years ago.
Yes, we have. We have. God forbid, if me and you ever agree on everything, the world will implode. I'm telling you.
If we get into a fight and emotions get involved, right? And I am concerned and afraid of abandonment and afraid of rejection from you, I am going to change my values because it is more meaningful me to keep someone in my life, even though they're abusive or even though I'm putting energy out. This is all shadow stuff. This is all shadows.
Yeah.
This is all. I'm afraid, and I don't see my self-worth as high enough to stand my ground and let the chips fall, because it's more important to me to have these attachments around me that feed me in some way, allow me to be a victim. Witches are not victims. Period.
No.
Witches are not victims.
No, they're not.
I am tired of victim. Oh, no. Yes, something crappy happened. Become a survivor, move past it, and quit holding like a sign around your neck.
It doesn't help.
I'm tired of everybody being so offended.
I don't care.
I'm not here to be unkind for no reason. But I'm allowed to be me just as much as you are allowed to be you. And I will more than happily let you be you if you more than happily let me be me.
I'm loving the fact that you keep on demonstrating how in the world witches fix their own problems. Mm-hmm. Because we are the source of our own problems.
Mm-hmm. Heal thyself, witch. Heal thyself, witch. Mm-hmm.
It is a wonderful thing to have and to realize, okay, no matter what the problem is, I can fix it.
Mm-hmm.
I just got to do the work or take the time.
Or take the responsibility and take the hit and learn from it. Move past it. Heal.
I can't tell you how many bosses loved me because I'd walk in with a machine going, hey, I just broke this. How in the hell do I fix it? Mm-hmm. And they would all be like, oh, well, here's how we keep you from doing that again.
There you go.
Problem fixed.
Mm-hmm. It's the same thing in craft, though, because sometimes you make decisions about coven direction or, gosh, I've done one or two botched rituals in my life. And then you have to go back and look, okay, what went wrong? What did I do wrong? What should I never do again? What should I try to do again? What kind of worked but seemed interesting? And what's that? You know, you have to go through that in every situation in your life, but you have to take responsibility for what you did.
Yep.
And not, look, people do not get up in the morning, every morning, and go, how can I screw shit up today?
No.
They don't. It's just through their normal actions and their normal thoughts and their normal conscious mind that something goes awry all the time. And we're here to learn and fix that. No one is out to get me.
No.
Maybe.
Nobody's out to get me and nobody's out to get you. And
well, sort of, but. There have been times there have been people out to get me. But that way, let's go.
It's all right. You know, but I'm not going to sit here and worry about it every single day.
No.
There's no reason.
Don't feed the fear. Don't feed the fear.
You know, yes, I'm gay and I live in a very small town. I have no fear of going out in public on a day. I don't see how people can live like that, that they're scared that they're going to.
Well, it depends on where you are in the world.
Someone's going to be mean to them just because we're out in public.
But it depends on where you live in the world, too.
True.
You know, being different in the Bible Belt has become easier over time.
Yes.
Whether it's from a religious standpoint, a sexuality standpoint, outliers of conformity have either been leaders or and set new precedent and moved towards something different and change makers, or they have been shunned. And it depends on what you're doing and really the energy behind it, if you think about it. I mean, those it's ones that are leaders and change makers really are not doing it. They're doing it from a place of the heart, right? The ones that are shunned and end up in the gutter are the ones that are, you know, with the ego.
It's all back to that ego.
Yep.
That ego is the death of all of us.
But it's not ego like you think egotistical, though, ego.
No.
It's the definition and protection of your identity. That is where your ego comes in. It's not.
Yes.
It's making it about you. And as a craft leader, it is never about you. As a third degree, you don't exist. You do not exist. You are a conduit. Nope. That is it. That's it. That's everybody thinks this pyramid is, oh, the leaders are at the top and it's all about the leaders. Uh-uh. It's upside down. It's all about the students.
I have to admit,
we just provide the teaching. That's all. I mean,
that's it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of times I've sit back going, why did I do this? It was easier at second.
I went to see Lady Santana one time when she was in North Carolina. I stayed overnight. Uh-huh. The next morning we were having coffee and we were talking about some different stuff. And I said, can't I just start all over and put another white cord on? She was like, absolutely not. Well, lady, why not? She's like, my dear, no. My dear, no. You need to keep going. But lady, it's so much easier as a neophyte. Lady Maya, no.
I'm sorry. We sit there. We tell people, once you go through this, we cannot put the genie back in the bottle. Mm-mm. There's no way to go back. There's nothing. Nope. It's done.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week for another episode. Pagan Coffee Talk is brought to you by Life Temple and Seminary. Please visit us at lifetempleseminary.org for more information, as well as links to our social media, Facebook, Discord, Twitter, YouTube, and Reddit.
We travel down this trodden path, a maze of stone and mire. Just hold my hand as we pass by a sea of blazing pyres. And so it is the end of our days, so walk with me till morning breaks. And so it is the end of our days, so walk with me till morning breaks.